The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Neymar's number one fan. Shaka Hislop is with us. We kick things off in the African Cup of Nations. Of course, when you took a look at the round of 16, it was really Ivory Coast against Egypt that kind of leapt off the page. Unfortunately, it didn't really do that during the 120 minutes. Goalless, so it went to penalties. Bailly would be the only player to miss. Egypt then advancing 5-4 to the quarterfinals. Well, for more on this, let's welcome in, shall we? Colin Udo is with us, as is Julien Laron. Colin, a bit of a surprise.
Well, yeah, you could say so, but if you remember, I've been saying it from the top of this tournament that I don't think Ivory Coast are going far just because of the way they play, and maybe the mentality was a bit wrong. But you could think that maybe if you look at Egypt, they started a bit slowly, and then now they've come to the point where, you know, they've picked up one loss to Nigeria, two very marginal wins, and then all of a sudden they've come here, dodged on penalty kicks. So just two goals scored over four games, and they are through to the quarterfinals. But Egypt, always a very strong force in the Africa Cup of Nations, and now that they've advanced to the quarterfinal, maybe they can do much better.
What's incredible, Jules, is that Bailly was actually one of Ivory Coast's best players. In fact, one of the best players on the pitch overall. Yet that penalty just made no sense.
I don't understand what he was thinking.
Maybe he was just trying to wait where the keeper will dive and then slot the other side, and he was surprised that maybe the keeper didn't move. Other than that, it doesn't make any sense. He's like slow motion run up in a way, and then the shot lacks so much power. It's just a ridiculous penalty. By the way, penalties is not the first time that Ivory Coast lose in this competition on penalties. They've got clearly something. I mean, they also won it on pens a long time ago, but yeah, that was bad memories as well in terms of penalty shootouts, and again for Bailly now, he's going to have a few difficult days, because already I think he's getting far too much abuse on social media and everywhere from Ivory Coast fans.
It's ridiculous, obviously, the ridiculous abuse, Colin. We're just going back to the penalty and the technique. As you say, it didn't quite make sense.
No, not at all. I mean, it was horrible. I mean, I just saw the run-up. It was so short, and I'm thinking, what is he thinking about? And, you know, look, like you said, he was the best player. He made a great tackle during the game, and then that penalty, it was just atrocious. And, look, Cote d'Ivoire have not had a very good run with penalty kicks. They've lost, six out of the last 10 at the AFCON. And if you remember, in 2012, they lost it to Zambia on penalty kicks. So just not good. Cote d'Ivoire and penalties just don't go together at the AFCON.
Does a shorter run-up make it easier for the goalkeeper, Sean?
Well, not necessarily, but that run-up did. Listen, as I saw Bailly approach that from that angle and that shorter run-up, there's only one side he can go. And that's exactly where Gabal went, and albeit it took a very good save with a strong top hand, but it was telegraphed. Right. And from a goalkeeping perspective, that's all you can ask for, that the taker tells you where he's going. And he made the save. And in the end, I say, as far as the penalty shootout goes, I don't think there can be much complaints, because Egypt were very good from the spot.
Let's take a look then at what that means at the bottom of the bracket. It means that Egypt will face Morocco now in the quarterfinals. Of course, Morocco coming from behind yesterday to win by 2-1 against Malawi. Egypt-Morocco be an interesting tie, Colin. Egypt need to get some goals, though, don't they? They can't just rely on these late penalty shootouts.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Like I said, I mean, just two goals scored in four games. They really need to get some goals, and they have to find a way to get Mohamed Salah in goal-scoring position, because not scoring goals is not going to help at this level. I mean, and you can't always rely on penalty kicks.
Now, Ivory Coast kept Salah at bay pretty well. You think over the 120 minutes, Jules, who have you got for this clash against Morocco in the quarterfinals?
Well, I think Egypt probably have to be slight favourite because they're so used to be later in the competition. They've got that kind of experience. They've been there before. They've not always won it, but they've won it often enough with this generation even, or certainly the one before. So I would think that they've got a slightly over-experience compared to Vahid Halilhodžić and his team, who have a lot of talent. We saw that with the Hakimi free kicks, for example, in the last two games. And they've got a lot of really, really good players, and they've got the belief now that they can go really far in this tournament. But again, yeah, I think Egypt's slightly favourite, but I personally would put money on Morocco. I like this Moroccan team. I like what Halilhodžić did. He's a very divisive manager. Everywhere he's been, there was the ones who loved him and the ones who hated him. We know about all the clashes with Hakim Ziyech, for example, and a few other players who he didn't feel had the right mindset and attitude for playing for the team and for the rest of the team. That's why he dropped them. And I think this is a huge game for him. I think if there were to be Egypt, the confidence and the momentum that we bring to them, I think then they could go really far.
Hakimi free kicks, yes, better and better. We're seeing it, really goodness me. Elsewhere, it was another goalless draw for a Shaq. Mali
yes,
nil, Equatorial Guinea nil.
Was it ever?
After 120 minutes. Equatorial Guinea, though, advancing 6-5 on penalties after Sakho missed the sixth for Mali. Colin, this is a tough watch. Just two shots on target in the entirety of the match. But Equatorial Guinea will not care.
Oh, they most certainly will not. And it's a bit disappointing for me because, you remember, I talked about Mali, you know, as one of my dark horses to go all the way. And this was a very, very tough loss for them. But, I mean, if you don't score goals in regulation time, you leave yourself open to the possibility of penalties. And for Equatorial Guinea, first time they're making it to the quarterfinal outside of, you know, when they hosted. So... Mm. Look, I'm not sure they will go much further than that, but I do think that it's a great day for them and they will be happy with what they've done so far.
Let's take a look, shall we, at the other side of the bracket and how that thing's set up then for the quarterfinals as this competition continues. It will be then, we know, Burkina Faso against Tunisia. Then on Sunday, Senegal will face Equatorial Guinea. Of course, the big news from Senegal's win against Cape Verde was the injury to Sadio Mane. We saw pictures of him in the hospital after the game. What's the latest there, Colin?
Oh, well, he's under 48-hour observation from what I gather from a member of the medical team because it's part of the concussion protocol. So, the first 48 hours was today. So, by tomorrow, you'll have a better idea of where he's going to be or whether he's going to take part in that game or not. But, I mean, like I said the other day, I think it was reckless to allow him continue after that clash of heads. He should have been taken off immediately. And the fact that he wasn't is a serious flaw and failure on the part of the medical protocols at CAF. I'm not a medical person, but I just think that after that clash of heads, Sadio Mane should have been taken off and not let on to play.
I think many fans of Senegal to beat Cape Verde by a bigger margin, Jules. Obviously, they got it done. They'll be looking to put in an improved performance in this quarterfinal.
Yeah, and we've been waiting for it, really. They've been very average in the way they play, the lack of creativity, the lack of goals. We were talking about the lack of goals earlier from Egypt. They've got similar issue, even if they scored two in this last 16 round. One was really late. They played against a team with red cards as well. So we expected more from them. I have to say, I'm not convinced by that midfield. I'm not convinced by the formation. It relies far too much on Sadio Mane on his own. And I think they need to try, Alucise has to try something a bit different now. I was hoping to see it in that game in the last 16 against Cape Verde. It was not the case. Even if Gay played slightly higher than the usual midfield three that we've seen so far. But I think something has to change because as we saw, Equatorial Guinea will defend really well. They're so well drilled, so well organized and structured, and they fight for each other, they play for each other. It's not going to be easy to break them down. So Senegal would really need some inspiration somewhere, find a way. Otherwise, it would be a scenario that we know already. It would be 0-0, and then we go to extra time, and then anything can happen, and even more if it's penalties.
Great stuff, guys. Colin's internet survived the segment. Ray, very good. Thank you very much, Colin.
Just a reminder.
yeah, it's always Shaka's fault. Just ask Mrs. Hislop. Just a reminder then, the quarterfinals of the weekend, it will be Gambia against Cameroon on Saturday, followed by Burkina Faso against Tunisia, and then on Sunday, Egypt, Morocco, and Senegal against Equatorial Guinea.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The US men's team, it's all about that clash with El Salvador tomorrow, of course, live on ESPN2. They're looking, of course, to book a place in the World Cup, and a victory against El Salvador would certainly put them on the right street to do so. For more on this, let's go to Columbus. Seven Crew looking ahead to the game.
Thank you very much, Dan. Yes, greetings yet again from Columbus. The U.S. men's national team back in the Ohio capital for a second time in this qualification campaign. Last visit, a victory over Costa Rica, something they'll be looking to replicate Thursday against El Salvador. Here's the qualifying table through eight games, six to go. U.S. in second, top three go to the World Cup, fourth into an intercontinental playoff. Welcome to Lower.com Field, frigid Lower.com Field, alongside Casey Keller, Jermaine Jones. I'm Sebastian Salazar. 19 degrees right now. It'll be 5 degrees later tonight, but everybody focused on tomorrow's conditions. They're telling us at kickoff it'll be a balmy 29 degrees, wind chill of 21. Some light snow potentially in the forecast for during the game. Now, everybody's talking about what impact this will have on the match. Let's hear from Christian Pulisic. He spoke earlier today.
A nice field that we're playing on, and the weather was actually kind of nice today. Sun was out. It's cold, but we're gonna be ready for it, and we'll be able to play.
Okay, so the idea of being in this cold was to give the United States an advantage. You played in a snow classico. Is the U.S. actually have an advantage over El Salvador due to these conditions?
I think we talked always about advantage, but with the fans, right? Yep. We wanted to have an advantage that you don't have so much fans coming from their opposite teams. But I think in general field, I don't think it would be an advantage because the field is good to play and there's no bumps on the field, there's no snow. Maybe it will snow a little bit, but we don't know. But I think it will not be a big advantage.
Yeah, I think it's more of an issue of travel. I think it's a case where you want to find a pitch that you know is decent. You also want to have a very pro U.S. crowd. And understanding where Canada chose to play their match, you don't want to have a game in, let's just take Orlando, for example. You have a game in Orlando, El Salvador has 3 hours less travel. They're in a comfortable position. You then have 3 hours more travel to get to your next away match. So I think it's a logistic thing. And if it, you know, makes El Salvador a little uncomfortable in the end, so be it.
To that point, your former teammate, Hugo Perez, who played with you on the U.S. national team, now in charge of the El Salvador program, he said, at least to the public, to the press, that's on Football Americas, he said, no, it's not going to be a problem. It won't distract us too much.
I also played in a match where Mexico never came out of the locker room for warm-ups because it was so cold.
Let's talk goalies, your position. We just got the news in today's press conference. Zach Steffen, not with the team. He's back in Manchester due to a back injury. They're listing him as day-to-day, so we may see him at some point during this window. But right now, it is Matt Turner's job. What do you make of it?
Well, I think the U.S. were very happy when Matt emerged, knowing that they had not only competition, but they had two competent goalkeepers. Matt proved himself very well when he had his opportunity to play, and actually a surprise to a lot of us that Zach got back into the side. Zach came in, played well. Well, now he doesn't have that opportunity, so at least Matt, we know, has been capable. Also, prominent move possibly to Arsenal. He's going to want to show what he's made of.
How big of a difference, Jermaine, is it? Is it a drop from Steffen to Turner, in your opinion?
No, I don't think so at all. I think Matt Turner, he opened the door. When we talked about it in the last games he played, he opened the door big time for himself. And, you know, he made it difficult for Craig Berhalter. And Craig decided for Stefan to go with Stefan. Yeah. He played good, and now Matt is back on his place where he wants to be. He can prove again that he's the right guy, especially with the move to Arsenal London maybe. Yeah. I think he's burning for that chance.
How does the weather affect the goalies in a game like this?
If it's dry, if it's not windy, you can always kind of move around and stay warm and put a couple layers on. So you'll see him maybe doing a little more movement from 18 to 18 just to stay warm. But for the most part, he'll be fine. The problem is sometimes when it's that damp and then your hands, you can't feel your hands, you can't feel your feet. I think it'll be okay.
One thing, I don't think it'll be too windy just because this is a very enclosed stadium, right? Yeah. There's not a lot of space for the wind to get in. Let's go from one end of the field to the other. Let's talk up top because Ricardo Pepi has been the guy for this team, and yet he hasn't scored in clubs since September, in international play since October. How big a worry is that coming into this window?
Yeah, it's got to be a little bit worry, and because he's been the guy that they've really kind of counted on. You know, we're going to see him in action both for the national team and at his new club, Augsburg. But it was a case where they thought, okay, here's this young kid that we can really, you know, lead the front line.
Was it too much too soon?
Necessarily, because he actually produced at that stage. Now the question mark is going to be going forward. You know, as you mentioned, there's been a drought. There's been a move now to Germany. You know, where's his head at?
But I think it's in general we have to all look at him. He's a young boy, right?
Yeah.
And he will have downs and he will have ups. And we saw so far his ups the whole time, and they were good. So now maybe he has like a down, and now we have to see how the move is to Germany, to Augsburg, how he relate to that. Can he make that step now to be the big guy and make the difference there? Can he make the difference for us? He showed it already a little bit, but now it's time. We have to see what's come next.
Do you worry that it hasn't gotten many chances at Augsburg? Because that's really what a forward lives off, isn't it?
Look, when I saw the move, I was surprised because it's a big number what Augsburg put down for a young player who has to come in and have to change for them the style, and they're trying to win games. Yeah. So they put everything on him. And if you know Augsburg like how I know Augsburg, they're not really creating a lot of chances in games. So we will see what he can do and how he can change the style of game for Augsburg.
All right, enough of us for now. Let's go get warm. Our coverage continues tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus at 6:30. We'll see you on ESPN2 and then kickoff shortly after 7 o'clock. Don't miss it from Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, you got to love our warm studio. Football Americas will be with you at the full-time whistle. Be sure to join at 7 Herc tomorrow on ESPN+. Just to confirm, all four matches then in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying, got the U.S. against El Salvador, Jamaica. Meanwhile, I'll play host to Mexico's Honduras against Canada, and Costa Rica take on Panama. Meanwhile, CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying recommences on Thursday. Ecuador, Brazil, Paraguay against Uruguay. Chile take on Argentina. And then on Friday, Colombia, Peru, Venezuela against Bolivia. Let's just remind you, shall we, how things stand going into it. Brazil and Argentina are fine. Obviously, they're on their home and hose. Ecuador should be fine as well. It is tight, though, isn't it? Looking at that fourth spot as we welcome in, Alejandro Moreno is with us. Ali, thank you very much for waiting very patiently as I make rather a lot of mistakes in all of those things. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong camera as well. Good day. Right then, Ali, out of those games, which one catches the eye?
Well, there are three of them, but I'll start with Paraguay against Uruguay. And you mentioned Uruguay, and you think, well, they should be fine. And not so much. This is a team that are winless in five. They've lost four in a row. And so nobody survives that, including their legendary coach, Oscar Washington Tavares. He gone. Diego Alonso comes in. Now, Diego Alonso is coming in with a team that was comfortably in the World Cup and now find themselves in a position in which they know they are in trouble and they need points. And they're playing against a team in Paraguay, at Defensores del Chaco, that also needs points. But never mind winning for Paraguay. How about scoring a goal? They haven't scored a goal in five matches themselves. These are desperate times for Guillermo Barros Schelotto, my former teammate, and now the coach of Paraguay. Both of these teams need 3 points out of this game. A point will not be enough with either one of them.
Meanwhile, can Chile capitalize on a Messi-less Argentina, Ali?
Well, every time that Argentina plays and Messi's not around, that's a story. And the next question, the obvious question is, well, who takes his place? It's going to be Paulo Dybala. Those are the reports coming out of the Argentina media. Now, what this means for Argentina long term, we don't know. But it does give an opportunity for Lionel Scaloni to evaluate his team when Messi is not around, to say, you know what, there may be an important moment in the World Cup or in perhaps yet another competition in which we're going to play without Lionel Messi. That's coming at some point or another. And so let's see what we can get out of this group of players and prepare ourselves for potentially Messi not being around in an important game. As for Chile, no Arturo Vidal for them. He's suspended, and then they also have absences because of COVID and COVID protocols. What's interesting about Chile is that they're playing this game, I'm chosen to play this game in Calama. Quick geography lesson for you, Calama is in the Atacama Desert in the north of Chile. Why is that significant? Altitude. It is at 2,400 meters of altitude. Now, that's not quite La Paz at 3,650, but it's still over a mile and a half in altitude above sea level. This is key in the sense that neither Argentina nor Chile have a bunch of players playing in altitude with their clubs. And so altitude is going to play a role at some point late in this game. Chile needs the points. Argentina is evaluating the process moving forward without Lionel Messi. This is going to be an interesting match for both teams.
Finally, Ali, Colombia, Peru.
And that this is the game of the match day, if you will. This is a match that you look at and you say, okay, both of these teams, 17 points apiece, and Colombia, much like Paraguay, well, they haven't scored a goal in five games. That's a problem, unless, well, you can defend. And Colombia has been defending well, because even though they haven't scored a goal in five matches, they've only lost one of those games. And so that's critically important as to what they do going forward. Now, of course, you can look at it from the perspective of, well, you know what? We struggle to score goals. How are we going to be able to win games if we don't score goals? That's a fair question. But you can also focus on the fact that, guess what? We're defending well. Let's focus on our defensive strength. The conversation about Colombia not scoring goals has been going on for a long, long time in Colombia. It's in every radio show, every TV show, it's in the newspapers, it's everywhere. And so that anxiety for the fans of Colombia as they go into the stadium in Barranquilla is going to be put on the players as well. Colombia is in need of a dominant performance, of scoring a couple of goals, getting 3 points, and getting a chance to release some pressure and a chance to breathe a little bit. But here comes Peru, a team like we've discussed in the past in CONMEBOL qualifiers. If you win two games in a row, you're gonna jump a bunch of people. And that's exactly what they did their last time out. They beat Bolivia, they beat Venezuela. Now they're right in the mix of things. And for them, they look at this game and said, we can maybe steal 3 points out of here. But I think for Peru, it would be critically important that they get at least a point from this match, and then they focus on their home game against Ecuador next week. What we know is that it's really tight. Fourth and fifth place for five teams that realistically have a chance. Mm. The math doesn't work there. And so we say it all the time in CONMEBOL qualifiers, every point matters and every game is a World Cup final. Right now, that really rings true. Every point matters and every game is a World Cup final.
What's on your top, Ali?
What do you mean, what's on my top?
What says ESPN something? I haven't got one of them. What is it?
Oh, here? Well, yeah. It's, you know, ESPN Soccer, just a little something. It's a nice little fleece. It's nice and warm and cozy. You know, it's a little cold outside, so I'm just staying warm. You know what I'm saying, Matt? Dan, I'm working it out with ESPN Soccer. I'll get one to you when I can.
Well, don't deliver it to Matt. Who's he?
Well, he's my best friend, not you. You're
right,
not my
good.
Best friend. Matt is a really close friend of mine.
Calling me the wrong name. Ali Moreno, thank you very much. Just a reminder, for a lot more on what's going on this week, be sure to check out our YouTube page. Don't forget to subscribe to ESPN FC.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Thomas Tuchel has been in charge of Chelsea for a year, and overall it's been a successful 12 months, hasn't it, since taking over from Frank Lampard, very much the pinnacle, winning the Champions League. However, reports in The Athletic are suggesting that some players within the squad have had enough of the manager as he welcomed in Craig Burley and Julien Laurent to the show. Discontent within the Chelsea dressing room, those who aren't playing, Jules, are suggesting that it's one rule for one and a different for others.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously this report comes after the win against Spurs at the weekend, and before that it's true that Chelsea had gone through a difficult patch, especially at home, dropping a lot of points, drawing a lot of games, and you saw at the time the frustration from Thomas Tuchel with the lack of success really individually and collectively, the way the team was playing. There's clearly some things were not going right, and from a player's point of view, clearly it seems, especially from the players who are not playing much, because this is exactly where this is coming from. Some discontent, you're right. I mean, if you're Timo Werner, you're not happy to be sitting on the bench a lot. But again, this is a top, top club. This is one of the best clubs in the world. And Thomas Tuchel is one of the best managers. And if you're not happy by not playing more, then you can always go somewhere else. Because from what I'm being told, certainly the atmosphere is not that bad. And certainly Thomas Tuchel hasn't changed since day one, when he arrived just before that Wolves game a year ago, pretty much to the day. And now he's been very demanding. He's been quite brutal at times in the way he speaks to the players, especially when they're not really doing what he wants. So again, I don't think there should be any surprise in the fact that some players, and especially the ones who are not playing, are not happy.
This is normal, isn't it, Craig, within a dressing room?
Well, if I had a player who wasn't playing and he was happy, I'd want rid of him anyway. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of normal, but it's also normal that when a side's going through and it's certainly not normal, but it becomes evident quite often when a team's struggling or has had a bad patch, more stories leak out than normal. I mean, it's just coincidence, that, isn't it? But, you know, interestingly, when you opened up there and said one of the allegations that is filtering out is, you know, one rule for one and one for the others, which is interesting because I was told by All and Sundry when we were having the Lukaku debate that there was one rule for everybody, and that's why Thomas Tuchel had to wield the power that he did and make sure he was dropped and he was taught a lesson. And it turns out that the players themselves, who we were told were some of the ones who were unhappy with the Lukaku situation, are now saying there's rules for some and rules for others. I mean, which one is it at Chelsea? I don't know.
He's like a dog with a bone, isn't he?
Well, I was told
you knew he was going to come
Thomas
back.
Tuchel, he ruled with an iron fist. Now we're being told it's one rule for some and one rule for others. When the argument was, no, everybody's treated the same and it doesn't matter who you're playing, and so Lukaku has to be dropped. What's changed?
Brutal Tuchel, Jack.
Well, listen, on the one hand, you understand that. Some managers are like that. And while going back to that Lukaku interview and the discussion around it, Jules and I had a disagreement around Thomas Tuchel and the handling of Romelu Lukaku. In this instance, this is par for the course.
Right.
Part of football management is man management. And everybody does that aspect a bit differently. I've been in dressing rooms and had pretty brutal things said to me and heard it said to other players as well.
What have they said to you?
Let's not get into that, Dan. But that's just kind of the expectation in so many dressing rooms, that you are able to take that criticism and you deal with it however you do, but you are expected to deal with it. The difference here now is all of a sudden when things aren't going well or you are out of favour and maybe you want to take an opportunity to pile pressure on the manager, you complain about it.
Right.
And I don't understand it because, again, that was the atmosphere around most dressing rooms in football that I knew. So to have this complaint come back in this manner, it screams of spoiled modern day footballers.
It screams of being pathetic, Shaka. You know that. I mean, this is not woke 2022. I don't know what is. I mean, I was frightened of some coaches shouting at me when I was 10, right? When I was growing up, before I even went to secondary school, I used to be frightened of them. Not as a professional footballer, not as a grown man being paid a lot of money. As you said, Shaq, we've heard some horrible things in dressing rooms. I'm not saying it's right, but sometimes tensions are high, the pressure's on, jobs are on the line, players have bad games, managers lose the plot, coaches lose the plot. It's all part and parcel of it. This complaining that Thomas Tuchel's been a little brutal on me about my finishing and it's making me second guess what I'm doing. Well, second guess it and get on a flight and sod off. Because if you can't take the criticism or a bit of bawling and shouting from a manager, you shouldn't be playing the game. And if you think that's wrong, go and join the woke society, the cancel culture, and sod off.
Tell us what you really think. Jules, overall, of course, we had Chelsea in the title race. Many thought that Lukaku could be the difference between not winning title and winning the title this season. Obviously, they have slipped over the last month. What has that done to Tuchel's future with regards to the confidence that everybody still has within him at Chelsea?
I think he would be the first one disappointed, and he knows the rules far too well at a club like Chelsea. I mean, he's one of the most intelligent managers that I've ever come across, and he knows that the day that those results stop, which means, you know, no more finals like the FA Cup, like the Champions League one, the League Cup one coming up, where you're not competitive enough anymore in the Champions League, for example, or in the league, then he knows he will be gone and someone else will come and replace him. What I like, and go back to his relationship with the players, is that he just changed the formation. Tactically, the system has changed. And they went for a back four and a 4-1-4-1 formation like we saw against Spurs, for example, because he wanted it to suit the players a bit more. He wanted Lukaku to be in a better environment, maybe to score more goals and to use Lukaku better. He moved Ziyech in a different role, different position in that new formation, because that suits him as well. And I think Ziyech is a good example. Going back to the article and the report, Ziyech was not really Tuchel's cup of tea when he arrived, and now he just scored one of the goals of the season. He's much better in his new position, and I think this is what Tuchel does. Of course he's tough, and Craig and Xhaka are right. You're always going to have a tough manager in some of the top clubs in the world, but he also understands that at times he maybe needs to change a few things and not just stay dogmatic like others might have been in his position. And I think that's why he changed that formation recently, and I think this is a good thing. This is a good thing, but he knows that the pressure will always be on. And the day those results stop, and that might be quite soon, he will be in danger.
How would you assess Chelsea if they finish third, Gray?
No, I don't have a major problem when you look at the three sides that are fighting. Two of them still are, really, with Liverpool with games in hand. I don't have a massive issue if Chelsea were to finish third of the three, but are in a position that you could sense was at least close enough. So if they were to put a good run together and at least close the gap, I don't really have an issue with that, because they're three excellent sides. And on any given season, you know, City could have an off turn, Liverpool could put a run, Chelsea could put a run, but City have been superb. So I don't have a major problem if Chelsea finished third, but I think I would do, and I think Abramovich might do, if that gap just continues to grow and City, as we speak, have a game in hand, it could go to 13 points and that could increase. And of course, all the teams chasing Chelsea, which if you look behind, some have got one game in hand, some have got two, and I think one's got three and Tottenham have got four. So they're not only looking above, they're still looking behind, even though they've had a couple of decent results. So I think finishing third's not the be-all and end-all, but it's how they finish third, if that's the case, if that makes sense.
Meanwhile, let's take a look at how things stand at the bottom of the table. Of course, we were expecting a lot of action in the January transfer window with regards to Newcastle bringing in new players. They currently sit, of course, 18th, 1 point adrift of safety. Well, they made a big splash today, reports suggesting that Bruno Guimarães is making that move from Lyon to Newcastle for about 40 million euros. Jules, I suppose, unlike the song that is on repeat in your car, we do talk about Bruno.
Exactly. I wish I didn't have the song so much in my car, but we do talk about Bruno Guimarães, as you said. The deal has been agreed. I know Lyon put out a statement this afternoon saying that there's no deal. The deal has been agreed in principle. They're working on the structure. Newcastle would like to pay the 40 million euros over the 5-year length of the contract that the player is going to receive. Lyon wants don't want the 5 installments, if you want. They would like it in 2, maybe just in 1 straight away. They know how much money Newcastle have, so they, in a way, in a strong position to negotiate, especially for this kind of details. So I still expect it to go through. He wants to go there. He's told the club. For me, he's an incredible player, and it's such a big coup if Newcastle put this one out. And certainly to help them stay in the Premier League, it will be start. And just to start this new era, I think this is the kind of players that they need and that they will want to go for. They've also made a big bid for Mitchell Baker, Leverkusen, the former PSG left back, 20 million, which is way above his market price. I suspect this one will go through as well. So they're clearly making moves, maybe not as many as some of their fans would have liked this month. But again, January is a tough month. And if they can sign Bruno Guimarães on the back of a Kieran Trippier, for example, Chris Wood is slightly different, but it would be very good business done.
Jules, we know you love players coming from France. I remember Ndombele, you're excited about him, and then Pepe as well. Now you think, this guy's going to save...
Don't jinx it.
You said this guy's going to save Newcastle.
But at least the other two were French, so I was and from Paris as well, so I was completely biased. This one is not from Paris and he's not French, so I'm going to be far more objective. He's a great talent. The only question mark I have is on, of course, the physicality. He's quite strong. He's a strong boy and he runs a lot and he works really hard. But again, I know it's the old cliche, but going on a Tuesday night in Burnley in a 6-pointer, a game that you cannot lose, and this is big battle, how will he cope? For the rest, I mean, the intelligence, the ball movement, the ball control, all of that he has. He's got this very, very good ability of settling in very quickly. He learned French in 2 or 3 months when he arrived in Lyon 2 years ago from Brazil, so he would adapt well. It's just the physical aspect that I'm not too sure yet, but I really, he's a wonderful player.
It's changed from Stoke now, hasn't it? It's like,
yes,
I had to adapt myself.
A Wednesday night in Stoke, it's now a Wednesday night in Burnley when it's raining. I will record because Stoke have been out of the league too long. I tell you what, forget that. I want to go back to that Chelsea thing. I'm sat here angry about it. Imagine giving an interview. How embarrassing that is from a player. Imagine giving an interview to a journalist. If I was giving an interview to Julien Laurens and I was sat with Julien and he's saying, what's it like? And the player's going, oh, the manager shouts at me a lot and it's really hard. He's really brutal. If I was a journalist, I'd be like, sorry, what are you? Some bloody big baby or something? I mean, he's embarrassing.
Craig, it wasn't an interview. It's sources that have been linked to the journalist.
When I go to work, the manager shouts at me. Oh, pull the doobie back over your head and don't go to work.
Do you think Bruno can save Newcastle?
I think it's a huge step in the right direction. As much as over the last week or two, you were talking about Lingard and Dele Alli, I think this is more in keeping with the player that Newcastle needs right now, whereas Lingard and Dele Alli quite clearly are Eddie Howe-type players. Guimarães as that midfielder that looking for some strength in the midfield. I think it ticks the box that Newcastle needs.
Just a reminder, for the latest Gab and Jules podcast, you can go over to the website. It drops on Thursday. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
They're not bad, are they? 80 goals in 79 games when you take an Erling Haaland stat. 17 assists as well to boot. Well, speaking exclusively to guess who? Oh, yes, Jan Arge Fjortoft. He said that he felt they can still get better.
Where do you feel now that you can most improve?
I think I can improve on everything. If you say I'm good finishing, I can improve my finishing a lot. And yeah, everything. I can become faster, so I can improve that. I can become stronger, so I can improve that. But if I should improve one thing, that is to don't be injured. Because if I'm not injured, I'll play much more games and I will deliver even better.
Because you do a lot of working, training with different things the whole day. To avoid injuries, like any player should do. How frustrated is it then to have to go off?
Yeah, it's the worst feeling to don't be able to play, because that's basically what your job is. As I said, if I could improve one thing, and if I could choose it right now, it would be not to be injured. And if you ask me if I have any goals for 2022, it's to not be injured. And if you have if I have any goals for the rest of my career, it's not to be injured. That's the main thing. And that's a part of it. And it's not good, but it's also good training. It's also good for the head if you can handle it. And it makes me even more hungry for success.
Jan looks a bit like a psychiatrist. A lot more of that interview over the next couple of days here on ESPN FC. Be sure to join us. Quiet weekend, actually, across the board, of course, when it comes to domestic football. But back with a bang at the start of February. FA Cup dominating on ESPN+. United, Chelsea, City, Spurs, Liverpool all in action. Meanwhile, in the Bundesliga, we've got a big game between Bayern Munich and Leipzig for you. In La Liga as well, on the 6th of February, Barcelona against Atletico Madrid from the Camp Nou. Meanwhile, in the Championship, just the one game today. West Brom in action against Preston. The surprise, Preston winning by 2-0, meaning West Brom missing out on the opportunity to close the gap on second and Blackburn. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next, where we will discuss Xhaka and those things that he had to say about Neymar in that Netflix documentary, which seemed to provoke the whole thing, Shaq.
No, what? No.
Stay tuned. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you for your tweet. Shaka here in the studio. We also welcome Jules and Craig. Craig, you still got your Christmas decorations up? Oh, it's what, January 26th?
That's not my role in this house. I don't get involved. I have a little friend with me. See that?
Oh, look at that.
That's what Thomas Tuchel has to give to those very, very delicate Chelsea players when he tells them they're absolutely mince in front of goal. Oh, I love you.
First tweet. We've had a lot of tweets about this, Shaka. Why was everyone except Craig featured on Neymar's documentary? I've only heard the clip of you on there saying that he's a diva.
That's not what I said.
That was what they played.
That's not what
You're
I said.
You're basically the motivation for this whole Netflix documentary show that Neymar's a nice guy.
Oh, I don't know what his motivation was. I'm just telling you what I said.
What did you say?
From the clip.
What did you say? He said he's a diva.
I said he's a diva.
Exactly.
No, that's not what I'm only joking. I said something far more sensible than that.
I just can't remember what.
I don't think you did. Yes, I did. No. It was far more sensible.
Jules, are you in it as well?
It's the party.
Jules at the party.
I've been watching.
When they have to wear red.
Unless you see me partying, yeah. You might see me dancing when red was the dress sense that year at the birthday party. I was told, to be fair, that this whole documentary started once Neymar watched the show and heard Shaka destroying him, and he said, "This is it. I've had enough of him. That guy. I need to do a documentary to show the world my real kindness."
That's it. What's the good scene is, it's like Neymar's in a similar setup to Craig, and then you can just see Jules at the window.
I'm here. Yeah, the curtains.
Hey, mate. Let me in.
I've never had a bad word to say about him, that's why, basically.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's all friendly.
Of course.
Just very nice.
When's it coming out?
You said he's a massive diva.
No, I did not.
They used you as an example of all the criticism that he gets.
That was not what I said.
Yeah.
Listen to...
You said please. That everybody appeases Neymar at PSG.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he's such a big diva.
No, that's not what I said.
That's what you said.
I said...
Jules, should Arsenal not strengthen during the window? What percentage chance do you give them to finish in the top four?
Did you say Arsenal? Sorry, I missed the beginning of the question.
Yes, Arsenal, your team, Jules.
I have to be consistent here, so I'm still going to say the same. Yes, they will finish fourth somehow. Don't ask me how. Don't ask me who is going to take them there or how they will achieve it, but they will finish fourth.
Are they going to bring anyone in? Arsenal.
Arsenal going to finish
fourth? They're trying to still do Arthur. They're trying to do Arthur.
They've been doing him for years, Jules. Every transfer window he comes up.
I know. I mean, Bruno Guimaraes, to be fair, was also on the list. I think they wanted him more in the summer. They didn't think he would go now. So they've missed out. They've missed out on him. It's going to be very difficult now. There's only 5 days left, so less than that even, to go and get a midfielder, probably a striker. We know how hard they try for Vlahovic. I don't know how sensible that was to try for so long in a way and put almost all your eggs in the same basket, if that's exactly what they did. But yeah, I doubt they will bring anyone now.
I thought Craig. Jill said Leicester.
No.
Well, I can't hear ever since that bloody dog chewed the iPod. It keeps cutting out. And I'll be honest with you, I tried to link those ones the MLS sent me, but yes. I can't do it. They got us to try and get us on board. I couldn't link them to my phone. This one keeps cutting out. It's a nightmare.
I didn't get any headphones from MLS, did you?
No.
No.
No, it's like...
They just tried to bribe Craig, apparently.
A level of importance to them, you know what I mean?
Oh, my God. Right, level of importance.
You're in the bottom rung.
Would you rather, Craig, your main player shoot first at a penalty shootout or last, like we saw today from Salah?
I would rather him shoot first and set the tone, because you might not get to the fifth one, depending. So I'd rather him go in the first two or three than the last two, put it that way.
What do you think?
Yeah, I prefer first two as opposed to last two.
Question for Jules. According to multiple reports in Spain, Frank Kessie from AC Milan is heavily linked with Barca for the summer on a free transfer. Do you think he would be an ideal replacement for Busquets, or do you think Barca should adapt a double pivot in the midfield? Whoa.
Yeah, I do think if there's a compartment of the game where they're okay for now, more than okay even, and could certainly invest the money, and in Casey's case, we're talking about wages because it would be a free transfer. I think he's somewhere else, because between De Jong and even if Busquets, I'm in the camp that thinks that now it has to be over very soon for him, but he's still there, and Gavi and Pedri, and other midfielders options that they have, I think that I would spend my money somewhere else. However, if Kessié is the guy they want, I think he would be a great signing for Barcelona and for any other top clubs. And trust me, the queue is quite long at the door of Frank Kessié for the summer, because a player like him for free is crazy. So there will be plenty of others, English clubs, French clubs, German clubs, other Spanish clubs maybe after him. If Barca can get a pre-contract now, go and do it, because again, there will be a lot of clubs, and I think he will be right. He can play in a three in midfield, he can play in a two, the double pivot, he knows it so well. But again, if you buy him to play in the double pivot, where do you put Pedri and Gavi and De Jong? So unless maybe De Jong goes, and as we said, Busquets is towards the end of his career now anyway, maybe it will make more sense, but I would spend my money somewhere else.
Xhaka, name the clubs that are getting relegated this season in order.
Not Newcastle.
Okay.
Burnley.
Yep.
Watford.
They got Hodgson now, though.
Norwich.
Burnley, Watford, Norwich?
Yeah.
Do you agree, Craig?
Yep. Burnley, Watford, Norwich. Yes.
The producer sent us an email giving us a heads up about this question, and it made me laugh because I thought of Craig opening that email and going, no.
Well, there's a slight flaw in it, because yesterday I said, give us 24 hours notice. So on a technicality, we didn't get 24 hours notice.
Right, but the question is, for everyone, your best favourite January transfer ever.
Well, I did open the email, actually, and then I opened it, and then I've got my out. I've never had a favourite January transfer window. I don't have a favourite transfer. Because I don't. Yes. Why would I have a favourite transfer? A transfer is a transfer.
Yes.
I don't understand. I don't like January transfer window.
What could have been the best? The one you think was the best transfer ever that was done in the January transfer window?
Well, it could have been phrased that way, and then I would have researched it.
Well, it is. It's got a best slash favourite. If you'd have read it.
Listen, you keep cutting out when I'm talking January because of these pods. Ever. So get on with it.
Right, okay. Jules? Shall I tell you mine, Jules?
The favourite has to be David Beckham to PSG, January 2013, of course, because...
Look at that, you
know,
PSG.
Come on, you know, when I was growing up, we've had some great players, of course. Then we went through a phase where we didn't have any really good players, full stop. And for them to see David Beckham, not the best ever, not the greatest ever, but certainly, you know, one of the icons for different reasons to the sport, for him to come to Paris and finish his career there was just incredible. But in a more serious choice pick, you have to say that Liverpool are pretty amazing, apart from Andy Carroll. They're pretty amazing in January. Yeah. Coutinho, Luis Suarez and Virgil van Dijk all signed in January. Liverpool have to be the best club for January transfers.
My favourite, Jules, is Julian Faubert to Real Madrid. What a January transfer window coup that was. My God.
Remember when he fell asleep on the bench?
Yeah, I do remember when he fell asleep on the bench, yes.
What? Stevie's outside that window. He's trying to finish that brilliant story he was telling last night on Extra Time.
Does he have a poo bag with him?
That one where I thought, it's so long, there's got to be a heck of a punchline.
Oh, man. Shaka, your best favourite January transfer ever?
Thomas Tuchel. That was January.
Oh. You're very excited about
him. I am. They won the Champions League.
Oh, there you go.
See that?
Yesterday, we heard the boys, of course, for their animal encounter. Yes, go on.
Hey, I love how the producer thought sending an email out with a question would spur some sort of response.
Oh, she's an optimist, though, isn't she, really?
It's a bit like a Thomas Tuchel kick up the backside, isn't it? Bosh.
So yesterday we heard everyone's animal encounters. Frank took a lady to a forest and got attacked by dogs. Craig with a bear. Stevie with a bear as well. This person wants to hear Shaka and Jules' animal encounters.
I got attacked by a goat.
Did you?
Yeah. In Southampton.
What are you doing with Lionel Messi?
I'm taking my kids to school. This is when I was playing for Portsmouth. I'm down in Southampton. I'm taking my kids to school. My youngest daughter had to be 1.5, 2, something like that. We get out of the school, I've got near moms. A goat starts to attack us. Oh, attack me. I'm holding near. This goat
Hold
is
on.
Up behind.
Where was the school? Was the school on a farm?
Yeah, well, no, it's in the middle of Southampton. I don't know where a goat just appeared. I'm outside my car, a goat up on his hind legs. Coming at me, yeah. I'm holding my daughter, mom. I'm like, no, well, I'm not really sure how to fight a goat when she ready decides to put you. So I'm now squaring up to this goat.
You're squaring up to the goat?
Yeah, well, I have to square up to the goat because he's coming at me.
Right, you've got to stand up and show us what you're doing, Shaq.
So I've got my daughter, mom.
Yes.
The goat is up in his eye and he's coming at me. I'm like that with the goat.
What, is the goat walking like a human?
Yeah, you know, goats...
Shaq, this really doesn't sound real.
When goats attack, they go up on their hind legs and try to butt you. That's what they do. So the goat's up on his hind legs, getting ready to come in with his old horns.
Wow.
I've got my daughter, mom, and so she... 1.5, 2.
Yeah.
I'm like, this with the goat, like, charging the goat. So two of us squaring up at each other. Till finally the goat is like, nah, I've had enough of this, man.
You scared the goat away?
Yeah, I won. He backed down.
And did you ever find out where it came from?
Nope, that was it. Never saw the goat again.
Oh, Shaq.
No. He went and told all his goat friends. He's like, that guy, don't mess with him.
I don't think Craig believes you.
I'm telling you.
I almost believed you a minute ago there. Like, I thought he was telling a proper story for a second. I thought, nah, I'm not.
Jules, if you ever want a free gab out, just bring an ostrich to the studio. He's really scared of ostriches. Do you have
an
animal
story? Hey, just ask a question.
What's wrong?
Because we met the only man on the planet, the only man living on the planet yesterday that's ever dipped French fries in soup.
Yeah,
does
that's
any
the last
guys
question.
Ever
wait,
do that?
You've got to wait. That's the last question, Craig. I want to hear Jules' animal encounter first.
Oh, sorry.
I remember, I will never forget. I was 13 or 14. We were on holidays at one of my dad's friend's house in Bordeaux, and the neighbors were my dad's friend hated the neighbors. I mean, the neighbors had a dog that was really nasty. We knew it, and the dog was called Adolf. I think to tell you a bit what kind of background the family had, the neighbors. Ooh, yeah.
Man.
And anyway, we were playing football in our garden, and the ball went over the fence to their garden, and my dad said we could not see the dog in the garden. My dad said, go and get the ball. We hate them. We can't go and ring the bell and tell them to kick the ball back. So I didn't feel comfortable with that. Anyway, I go over the fence, can't see the dog, anything, go and get the ball slowly. And as soon as I touch the ball, I can hear the dog barking and running. I swear to God, I ran quicker than Usain Bolt. And as I was about to go over the fence to go back outside, he bit me in the bum. I swear to you, but I was already on my way out, so it was only a little bit. But Adolf almost got me. It was terrible, man. I swear I can still see in my head now.
Wow. There you go. Who thought animal encounters would bring such a...
I mean, who called their dog Adolf in the first place?
Well, I think we know who. Finally, as Craig said, Stevie said on yesterday's show that he puts fries in his soup. What are some odd combinations that you like?
What?
Yeah, so he's... And he was like,
he doesn't put fries in his soup. He said he dips them in like bread.
Yeah.
You hear that, Shaq?
Why?
Well, I don't know. Do you know what he said to me? He said, and then he tried to argue. He said, because somebody asked him, Gab, about pineapple on a pizza and a well done steak. And then he said, does anybody put fries in soup? And I'm like, I'm guessing you're the only man on the planet that does this. Then he tried to say to me, I said, you dip bread in soup? And he says, then he shouted for the next minute in the back. Tell me the difference between dipping bread and dipping fries in. I'm like, are you really seeing this?
Oh, man. Obviously, well done steak, pineapple on pizza, and ketchup on pasta was the three options that I gave for a Twitter poll.
Right.
What was the one, Jules? What do you think was the most popular? With regards to the worst.
I would say, the pineapple. My middle son, loves the pineapple pizza. And we're like, in our house, we're like, how? I cannot be your dad. Like, where is this coming from, the pineapple on the pizza? This is wrong.
No, it was pasta. Ketchup, pasta, over 50% of people, so that was the worst thing. Pineapple on pizza tastes great.
I put brown sauce in lentil soup. Does anybody do that? Broth.
I dip my McDonald's fries into my McFlurry. What?
Yeah, sorry? It tastes nice.
Well,
yeah,
no, that's not true. That is not true.
No, it tastes nice.
That's
try
disgusting.
Fries, yeah, but, fries
to be that fair, is disgusting.
In a sundae. It tastes good.
Do
most
that
people. You put
that
fries
is disgusting.
You still go and get a McFlurry, do you? You big kid.
I am a big kid. We know that. Sorry. That's mine. That's allowed.
Happy meal.
Sorry, I don't have lentil
Brooks
soup with brown sauce.
Happy meal and McFlurry.
I've advanced to an adult.
Imagine putting your palate. Your palate's a disgrace. Seriously, you want to go and get a palate operation and get an exchange for a decent one.
Right, we're done. We're done. You're done for the day, Craig. What are you going to do for the rest of the evening?
Actually, my wife's gone out for a short period, and she's bringing me back a pizza, but it will not have pineapple on it.
Oh, very that nice.
Soup and fries.
Soup and fries.
Soup and fries.
And a McFlurry. Everyone's a winner.
What a wonderful evening.
Hey. ESPN FC then back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us.